Welcome one and all back to my shed or back to the damage report. You can see it whichever way you want. But I'm John Arola and I am here and I am here to stay for at least a little bit. I'm kind of feeling like I want to travel. I don't know, maybe hit like Portland or Seattle or something. But I'm here for now and I'm not alone. Got Francesca Fiorentini, host of the Bituation Room. Francesca, how's it going?
Woo! It's going good to be here, I guess, despite it all. We're still here and you still got your shed. So I guess we'll have to do the news.
I do. And thus far, the internet playing ball, which is nice. But anyway, look, we're entering in a new week of news. We've got a little bit of a shakeup in the Republican primary. I predict that coming out of that debate, not all of them would be around for the next debate. And we have someone dropping off. So we're going to get to, you know, bid them adieu as they sail off into the sunset. We've got some promises being made, actual substantive policy promises being made by Donald Trump about what he's going to do if and when he becomes president for life. So that's very cool. Threats against, you know, people like me and Francesca, maybe people like you in the audience. That's going to be fun to talk about and a whole lot more besides. Do you have trouble, like problems with your teeth? Do you have problems killing things that are far away? We have a solution to both of those problems in one go. And once we get to the aftermath, we're going to be joined by a presidential contender on the Democratic side. I'm not sure how to pronounce this name. There's a lot going on there. Uyghur, I believe it is. Uyghur is going to be joining us. So that should be a lot of fun.
Not me, Uyghur.
That's good.
That is good. That's pretty good.
He should use that.
Not me, Uyghur, is pretty good.
Because it helps you pronounce it. I need a campaign slogan that helps people pronounce Ida Roll. That's the only reason I'm not running for president. So if you can figure it out, maybe I'll run. And the return of animal news coming up in the aftermath as well. So that's going to be a lot of fun as well. And by the way, we are back to doing our top 10 lists. We did a little update on my prior predictions about what my parental leave would be like, which it was not at all like I thought it would be. But this time, we're going to be doing our top 10 parental surprises. I'm 3 months in as of literally today, actually, 3 months. And Francesca's 11 and a half months in.
13 months.
Jeez. Okay. Well, we've learned a few things and we're going to try to share our wisdom or make jokes. I don't know, some combination of the two probably. So anyway, we got all that and more. Send us your comments, your super chats, your tweets, and we'll respond to them during our social breaks. But with all that said, Francesca, you ready to start this thing?
Ida Rolla, I barely even know her.
I don't think that's gonna be it. But it's a good first try. Good. And now let's forget it, move on. We'll workshop it with our audience live, perhaps. Anyway, with that said, why don't we move into the news, which is, oh boy. Okay. Some of the darkest moments from Donald Trump's first term could look positively quaint by comparison to how he envisions his second term going, especially in the area of immigration. He has been making some bold promises, both in his stump speeches, as well as through his surrogates, a sort of like quasi-legal surrogates like Stephen Miller, going out there and promising the world to xenophobic right-wingers when it comes to immigration. So top line, so the changes he wants to make should he become president again, he's going to revive many of his first term border policies, including banning entry by people from certain Muslim majority nations and reimposing a COVID-19 era policy of refusing asylum claims. Though this time he wouldn't base that on COVID because, you know, we're not supposed to be worried about COVID. Now it's going to be other infectious diseases like tuberculosis. And you know that a person's rationale for doing something is rock solid when they have to change the rationale, they still are doing the same thing. So anyway, look, bold line for this. He's going to scour the entire country for unauthorized immigrants, undocumented immigrants, and deport them literally by the millions. He's going to be setting up massive camps. We're going to have all of the details on those things. But Francesca, the specifics of this aren't super surprising, perhaps. But the fact that he is going very much back to this well and is making this a centerpiece of the policy side of his presidency, I find to be a little bit surprising. I thought that maybe they'd back off that, you know, to make themselves a little bit more appealing. But no, this is still the core. What do you think?
It's still the core, and he has to outdo himself, right? I mean, he spawned all these other MAGA, you know, wannabes, and you've got your Greg Abbotts in Texas, and Texas is rolling out policy that basically says just, you know, a stop and frisk for Latinos, basically. Anyone who looks like they could maybe possibly have a cousin who is undocumented will be stopped and, you know, they can be detained. And so he's got to one up Greg Abbott. He's got to one up himself. He's got to one up the former Donald Trump. And I think to me, the biggest thing is the way the media covers this, right? Whether, and the fact that suddenly when it comes to fascist ideas like this, you know, let's just like, again, mass deportations, getting even more draconian, the media is like, oh my God, oh, that's incredible. What do you, Chris Christie, have to say about that? Do you agree with mass deportation? Like, they take Donald Trump's psycho plans at face value and compare them to everyone else's instead of saying, hey, hang on, that's actually against international law, our constitution, you know, like any kind of protections that we have for asylum, which by the way, Biden is not doing a very good job at upholding either. So that's my real thing, is the way that fascism is, we roll out the red carpet because the ideas are so out there and psychotic. And they're also so clickbait, like newsworthy, like news outlets know. And they're like, oh, what about this? And they don't push back ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I think it has effectively been normalized in a lot of different ways. And you've laid out how from the point of view of the media, it's been normalized. And by the way, some of the motivations for why it's been normalized. But it is literally more normal than it was in the past. He is no longer just an outside candidate promising this stuff. He already did some of it. He's a former president and he wants to do it again. So now it is just a part of our history, in addition to all the other reprehensible xenophobic stuff that presidents have normalized for a number of decades. But that's what he wants to do. There's lesser versions of it that many of the contenders going up against him would do. As you point out, Joe Biden wasn't exactly 100% better on these issues. So all of these things are motivating factors for everyone, even good-meaning people. And I don't include most members of the mainstream media in this, but for most of us, we need to check to just, you know, realize perhaps how much has been normalized. And that's why I wanted to make this our first story right off the bat. It is a reminder to me, since I'm coming back for 3 months and not following the news, that no, this guy is not just a buffoon. He's a buffoon, but he's not just a buffoon. He's an incredibly dangerous person who has surrounded himself with arguably more dangerous people. And he is not joking about this stuff. He wants to do it. And that said, I want to jump into some of the specifics of what Trump would do when it comes to immigration. So to help speed up the mass deportations, because they have to be mass, but they also have to be fast, Mr. Trump is preparing an enormous expansion of a form of removal that does not require due process hearings. Due process is just, that's an extravagance that we as a modern democracy cannot afford. To help Immigration and Customs Enforcement carry out sweeping raids, he plans to reassign other federal agents and deputize local police officers and National Guard soldiers voluntarily contributed by Republican-run states. We could, if we wanted to, get into a whole big philosophical and legal and constitutional debate about how you're definitely not supposed to use the military to conduct law enforcement measures. That's pretty clearly spelled out, but he's going to do it and he's going to control the vast majority of the Supreme Court and more of it as the many years of his second term go by. But he's, of course, going to build huge camps to detain people while their cases are processed and they await being deported. So expect huge expansions of camps along the borders as well. And then before we jump into our conversation about this, there's just a grab bag of a whole bunch of stuff that he wants to do. So foreign students who participated in anti-Israel, read anti-Israeli government and military policy. I hate it when the media just says anti a country. Yep. I hate that. Don't normalize that. It's ridiculous. If you were against George W. Bush, you were not anti-American because all Americans did not agree with George W. Bush. That's not how it works. That's propaganda. I hate it. Anyway, or pro-Palestinian protests, you get into that, but protests would be canceled. So those political opinions, if these students on foreign visas are expressing them, they are quite literally and substantially politically incorrect from the point of view of the regime. And you will be barred from the country. They will cancel you. That's their culture. But they're going to do ideological screening of visa applicants to stop people that the Trump administration has an issue with their literal political opinions, not actions. People who had been previously granted temporary protected status could see that revoked and they could be sent back to countries that are unsafe. We could have those who are allowed to live in the country temporarily for humanitarian reasons would lose that status. So tens of thousands of Afghans included who were evacuated during the pullout from Afghanistan could be sent back to a regime that might want to talk to them a little bit. And so remember all the stuff that the Republicans and Trump had said during that pullout about how it was chaotic and how look at all this violence. No, they want to contribute to it. They want to serve people up on a silver platter for the Taliban to potentially imprison or kill. Ending birthright citizenship. You could just add a whole bunch of stuff. Attempting to end DACA. Every single one of these deserves a focus on the show, and we'll get that focus between now and the election. But there's a lot there, Francesca, and it's all utter madness.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to say it is madness, and it is a definite and marked change because it's basically proudly embracing some of these horribly fascistic tendencies. But I also think we need to mention, like, it's not like Joe Biden has welcomed with open arms Afghan refugees. Now, if you're from Ukraine, come all, as we should. But if you are Afghan, if you in fact helped our military during our 20 plus occupation of that country, no, you were lucky if you made it out. So let's just be real that this government currently loves deporting, especially brown migrants. So Trump is just saying, yeah, I'm going to fully make that a policy. And what's so crazy about this is, you know, the like, oh, we're gonna expedite the detention. What do you think like immigration court looks like now? It has often been described because of how defunded it is, how resourceless it is. It is described as a life or death sentence issued by a traffic court. So effectively, this person could send you back to your country where you might die, child, right? And that's done in like 15 minutes, 5-10 minutes, because the people who are in those immigration courts do not have the resources they need. So again, it's just like, we've never in earnest actually built a robust system that can legally and effectively process people who are seeking different claims for different reasons. And because of that, we've been duped into just demonizing immigrants as if they obviously are the problems. And now you have an actual neo-fascist coming along and he's gonna make it official policy to be this xenophobic out and out. It just, honestly, I know this is bad and it truly is. Yes, the ideological test, what are you talking about? It's truly bad. But when I think of the border and I think of immigration policy, you have to know that I just see this as a bipartisan failure for decades.
Yeah, that system that you talk about is not going to be built by Joe Biden if he gets a second term, or whoever comes after Buttigieg or Newsom or whoever. And at the same time, and this is not a distraction, literally you need to consider both of these things. Trump wants to set up massive border camps. Like, it's just like, Jesus, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's utter madness. And the issue for me, look, I'm concerned about Donald Trump and the fact that he is a fascist, the fact that he has like collected around himself a group of the most reprehensible, creepy fascists the country has on offer, like Stephen Miller. And we'll get to some of what he has to say. But I'm like on a level that is almost more frustrating because I can see what they say. I can see what they plan to do. I can only speculate about what the 50 million most devoted Trump fans would do and say and what they want. And what they want is way more than this. They want to go farther. They're going to love this. They're going to eat this up. It's why, remember, the first thing Trump did to appeal to people in 2015 when he came down that escalator was demonize Mexican people. Mm-hmm. But they want to see even more. And he sort of knows that. So he told a crowd in Iowa in September, following the Eisenhower model, we will carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. That one that he's referencing, I guess this is a good thing that he doesn't want to say what the name for that operation was. That was Operation Wetback. So he's at least a little bit uncomfortable saying the racist name for it. He is not uncomfortable doing it, and doing it not at a 1954 level of bureaucracy, but with jet fuel applied to it, doing it with modern transportation and bureaucracy and law enforcement and surveillance and all of that. Now, some of you in the audience, maybe you're optimists, I don't know, might be saying, will he really do this? Well, bear in mind, he did a lot of his immigration stuff during the first term. Like, there were definitely priorities of his that he did not make good on, but the immigration stuff he was pretty aggressive about. Mm-hmm. Stephen Miller wants you to take it seriously. He says, any activists who doubt President Trump's resolve in the slightest are making a drastic error. Trump will unleash the vast arsenal of federal powers to implement the most spectacular migration crackdown. The immigration legal activists won't know what's happening, which definitely makes it sound legal. Immigration activists just literally don't know what's going on. And it's also a reminder of the philosophy of modern conservatives, that government is supposed to be very small and ineffectual when it comes to doing anything that benefits you, and so gargantuan and powerful that before anyone even knows what's happening, it can scour the entire country and deport tens of millions of people.
Absolutely.
Think about that.
I mean, I think that's really, really important. You know, John, what you just said there is, I think, something that we forget all the time, right? We focus on the economy a lot when it comes to conservatives. We focus on, oh yeah, like their small government, their corporate tax write-offs, and you know, all that, and they just get rich in the meantime. But you know, we forget about the police state. We forget about the same people who hate the so-called deep state, love the police state. They love Border Patrol. They love the cops, because 9 times out of 10, they're not the ones getting their skulls cracked open. So they, like, as long as it's weaponized on the other, the immigrant, the black person, the activist, they love a massive police state that knows whether or not you ordered Plan C pills online. So never forget that, guys, when you're arguing with your conservative relatives this Thanksgiving, what they think about the expansive reach of Customs and Border Patrol, the fact that they have, what is it, you know, 30 miles from any border where they have complete jurisdiction. Correct me, because I know it's not exactly 30. It might be more, maybe a little bit less, but it is wild what they can get away with. I know there's a little bit more that he says about the labor market, John. I just, like, this is just very funny to me. Like, who's going to, wake up at 5 a.m. and like work the chicken farms? I've talked to like plant owners and factory owners who are like, literally, like the pay is good. I just can't get even teenagers to wake up that early to like actually get these eggs from these hens. I need to hire immigrant labor. They're documented, but I need immigrant labor.
Yeah, we know that there were issues like that in Florida, obviously. But when you're talking about, you know, populations this large being taken out, there is no area of American society or the economy that will not be massively affected by this. And they either don't know that or don't care about that. He was asked about, you know, this is going to be like a massive disruption to the housing sector, let alone all these different industries. And he says, because he's an expert in the economy, Stephen Miller is, says mass deportation will be a labor market disruption celebrated by American workers who will now be offered higher wages with better benefits to fill these jobs. And if there's anything modern conservatives, in particular Stephen Miller, care about, it's the wages that American workers get. Americans will also celebrate the fact that our nation's laws are now being applied equally, and that one select group is no longer magically exempt. Not that select group. Of course, the wealthy will always be magically exempt. That will never change. He's working overtime to become a part of that class. But anyway,
they will now be offered. See, the problem was, there is too much cheap labor. Once that goes away, we have no choice but to offer higher wages. Like, no, you stupid, dirty capitalist. Don't you know how the system that you worship works? That's the whole point. You don't offer higher wages. You take advantage of undocumented people. You need this. You've taken advantage of slave labor. You're employing now children because you can't hire enough. So 13-year-old, okay, great. We're going to go back to the coal mines. You know, kids are going to get black lung. I love it.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that is actually the unspoken solution to this problem. In theory, were you to pull out millions and millions of people, then yes, there might be less supply to the labor market. And in theory, barring no other changes, that could raise wages. But they are desperately trying in a number of states to lower the age that you can be thrown into the mines or into the factories or literally into a chicken processing machine. Like, they are trying to solve both ends of this problem for themselves. So don't trust Stephen Miller with your future.
And they're dying, guys. There's like new reports about the number of kids, preteens, 13, 12-year-old kids who before school have a job and have died operating heavy machinery in the United States of America.
Look, little kids should not be paying attention to Greta Thunberg. What they should be doing is working in a pork processing plant and getting married at 13. I think we all know this.
We should have done that story today, by the way, the Greta Thunberg getting interrupted by the guy who didn't want to talk about Palestine.
It's just, we don't want to, I want
it's so good.
And it would have given you opportunity to do the impression.
First of all, Greta is not, I can't use this word, but an S-lib. I want everyone to remember that. Greta, she's a real one, y'all. Everyone tried to co-opt her, make her some kind of, you know, like little emblem. Uh-uh. She will F your crap up. I can't say all the words I want to say.
Okay, we're going to check to see what she's up to for next Monday, bye. For the next Fantastic Monday. In any event, just a little preview of what's going to happen. And bear in mind, while a lot of this is questionably legal or constitutional, he is once again going to be appointing judges at all levels for decades, perhaps. And so a lot of this will be made to be legal and constitutional when the conservatives have an 8-1 supermajority in the Supreme Court. So just to remind you a little bit of the stakes as we roll into the presidential election. Anyway, with that said, we're going to take our first break, but much more to come, including how Trump is going to root out the vermin of his political opponents after this. Welcome back, one and all. If you're just joining us on the show right now, please hit that like button if you haven't already. And we're going to roll right back into the news, starting with this.
Today, especially in honor of our great veterans on Veterans Day, we pledge to you that we will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country.
That's fun. The only thing I think that could make promising to root out all of your political opponents from throughout the country worse is to say that you're doing it to honor the veterans. You know, the veterans who fought and died so that people would be free to eventually be hunted down by Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So that, look, that's the promise that he's openly making. He's very proud of himself, by the way. We're not going to show you, but almost that exact quote, word for word, was put up on Truth Social, including the reference to his political opponents being vermin, a literally dehumanizing term that has been used by any number of other authoritarian or fascist or Nazi leaders to justify murdering people that you disagree with. So that's fun. And that said, here's a little more.
That lie and steal and cheat on elections and will do anything possible. They'll do anything, whether legally or illegally, to destroy America and to destroy the American dream. The real threat is not from the radical right. The real threat is from the radical left. And it's growing every day, every single day. The threat from outside forces is far less sinister, dangerous, and grave than the threat from within. Our threat is from within, because if you have a capable, competent, smart, tough leader, Russia, China, North Korea, they're not going to want to play with us. And they didn't. Despite the hatred and anger of the radical left lunatics who want to destroy our country, we will make America great again. Thank you, New Hampshire.
Look, I don't know how much people are really paying attention anymore after, you know, the last few years, but that, you know, by itself is should be seen as one of the most horrifying speeches that a potential future president of the country could ever give. The just obvious demonizing of his political opponents, justifying with language the exact way that they have in other countries. Eventually, these are not people that are worthy of your respect or worthy of life. And then at the same time, pulling a little trick where he says, forget about all those other outside things. So he wants to have his fascist cake and eat it too. He wants the fascist policies and ideology here in America, but he also wants people to stop being so hard on authoritarian leaders abroad. Don't worry about Viktor Orban or Putin or the leadership of China or whatever. Like, don't worry about any of that stuff. They're fine. Just leave them be, and they'll probably tell their population to leave us be. And then we could just have this community of fascist authoritarian states, and it'll be awesome. Francesca, what do you think?
I mean, that's really what the dream is for them. And I think some people are like, yeah, that would be good. Like, why not just have like different authoritarians? And then they all get together at their authoritarian brunch, you know, once every quarter, and they hang out. Well, here's the problem with that. Because when Putin orders the eggs and then they give the wrong order to Trump and they give Putin Trump's order, What happens? We go to World War III, people. Like, this is the thing about authoritarians, fragile ass authoritarian leaders. It's that they can be triggered by anything. So we think it's fun or fine, you know, oh yeah, invade Ukraine, do whatever you want. Oh yeah, lock up your own population. Love it. Hey, starve your population, North Korea, all good. And then it's like, oh, except when these, again, you know, small deed little dictators get together and then they start to fight, then we're all effed. So, like, let's not forget that that's the danger with this. But also, oh yeah, they would never play with us. They would never do anything to us. In fact, I think they literally played with, like, they actually were messing with us. You know, whether it was a 2016 election, whether it was our messing with our voter rolls in Russia's case, whether it was like meeting Donald Trump absolutely with no preconditions in the case of Kim Jong-un, like, I think that's what they did. They played you. They played you for a fool. Now, that being said, I think Biden is being played right now by some foreign leaders. Hello, Netanyahu. But Trump is absolutely, all you got to do is flatter him. Have you lost weight? Done. Have some nuclear submarines.
That's really all it takes. By the way, he spent the speech literally, he said of Xi Jinping, he said he's like central casting. There's nobody in Hollywood that can play the role, the look, the strength, the voice. He said that Orban was very strong inside and out of his country, but the Europeans don't like him. The Europeans so touchy about authoritarianism. Yeah, no, he loves these people. He's always loved these people. He loves authoritarian dictators. He doesn't love you. And if you're a right winger watching this, I want to put this in terms that you might understand. He says when he's president, no one in these countries ever messed with us. But you also believe that China gave us COVID as a bioweapon and it killed a bunch of people. They did that while he was president. So it seems like they were perfectly comfortable messing with us since they sent the bioweapon to our shores. But you're not going to care. Anyway, I also want to point out that the way that these sort of speeches get talked about, very different than it has when, you know, like people on the Democratic side have made, I guess, comments that you could try to lump together. So as an example, here's the headline when Hillary Clinton years ago called some Trump backers deplorables. It was part of the headline, calls many Trump backers deplorables and GOP pounces. The New York Times, for the speech you just saw, Trump takes Veterans Day speech in a very different direction.
God.
Well, it is in a direction, I suppose. And look, I'm sure they had multiple headlines about it. But anyway, going beyond just how bad the headline is, I saw this tweet from Matthew Gaetz who says, though to be fair, you can't. So he was talking about how bad the headline is. But then he wanted to demonstrate how little the New York Times appeared to care about this story. Or I believe in this case, it's the Washington Post. But let's roll the video and I'll talk over this. You're going to see him on the app trying to find this story where Trump says he's going to root out the vermin, the threat within in the country. Forget all this foreign stuff. We're going to find the threat that's brewing within our country. No, I guess there's something about running shoes. And look, the Gaza stuff's very important. That's true. There's some election updates, something about energy. Hey, that's cool. And interviews and games. That's fun. Something about Legos. Cool. China, Nikki Haley. Oh, something about her heels. Yay, that's fun. And just on and on and on and on. Trump is threatening to kill his political opponents. And his, like, whether you think he's going to actually do that, you should be terrified by the fact that his base loves these sorts of promises. There's a reason he ran to Truth Social and immediately posted the same thing. It's because they want the final salute, the final political solution in America. That's why they were part of Q. They want their enemies gathered up, lined up, and gunned down.
So I just think it's really important. And it's been hard because he's got all these legal battles and that seems to be more interesting, but it's actually like what is really happening underneath the surface is exactly this, is this like scary language talking about vermin. It's gotten Stephen Miller's fingerprints all over it, which is incredibly upsetting. You know, he comes out of his blanket fort to write these, his pillow fort, and playing with his little dolls to write these speeches. And the idea that, you know, this Heritage Foundation Project 2025, like the idea that we need just a Caesar. We need a new strong man. We need him to be even more skirt laws, even more like hollow out the like any kind of hollow out government, basically. And they're basically getting like random followers who are like at Trump rallies to sign loyalty pledges to be like, I'll be in your cabinet. I will, you know, be your brown shirt. This is, John, remember when I said the next cabinet of Trump's will be like the first three people to reply to his Truth Social post? That's literally what they're doing. And they're just like, here you go. You know, you get a sticker. That means you can arrest anybody and kill them, probably. You know, like, it's so, you're right that we should be paying more attention to this. The problem is that everything else is also still awful. And lastly, I just want to say that the right worships what's happening in Israel right now, not only because they have like, you know, if they're evangelicals, they think that, you know, we should support Israel so that all the Jews return, so that then Jesus comes down and kills the Jews. I don't know how that works, but you know. But because they love the military state, they love a country full of walls, keeps out the bad, supposedly. It is armed to the teeth. That there, you know, you can't speak certain languages in certain areas, separate roads, you know, a weaponized, militarized Jim Crow. Yeah. They love that. So that is also why the right worships Israel. And it's not only, again, for this evangelical reason.
These are people who are predisposed to be incredibly scared of literally everything. Walls feel like safety to them. They make them feel comfortable. Strict hierarchies in every aspect of life make them feel comfortable, particularly when conveniently they're placed at the top of those hierarchies. That is what this is actually about. And Trump knows that. That's what he's trying to appeal to here, using, you know, the terminology, as we can flash these graphics, like multiple researchers at Columbia and, you know, NYU. This is what Hitler said. This is what Mussolini said. He knows that. That's why he's not accidentally using the language of these dictators. He's using it intentionally because that's what his base wants. Because there are some fundamental ideological differences between different groups in this country. These people do not support democracy. They are willing to tolerate it briefly if they are winning. And that is it. And the second they start losing, and they have been losing, or they believe that, you know, demographics will cause them to lose, they turn against it. And these are people who really believe that every single elementary school teacher is trying to trans their kids or whatever. These are people who've been driven literally insane by the media that they consume. And they want someone to promise that the shooting will begin. Anyway, the Trump campaign, Stephen Chung, one of his spokespeople, responded to those who were like, hey, should you be using like Mussolini terms? And he says, those who try to make that ridiculous assertion are clearly snowflakes grasping for anything because they are suffering from Trump derangement syndrome and their entire existence will be crushed when President Trump returns to the White House, which is not in the same neighborhood as reassuring. That your existence will be crushed when my question to you is, hey, it sounds like you're promising to kill me. And you just sort of like worded it differently. Now, he later said, no, I mean, their like sad, miserable existence, not their entire existence. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. We have Trump derangement syndrome. They want to round up millions of people and gun them down. But we're crazy.
I wonder when we're going to hear the he's just kidding line, John. I have a feeling second time around. Maybe there's no more jokes. He's not kidding, right? Yeah, like, remember how often we heard he was just joking? He said vermin because, you know, he loves the movie Ratatouille. Like, yeah, huh? like no, truly. And yeah, so it is scary. It's funny because I hate that the media isn't covering this, but I'm also like, when they do cover Trump, they're so feckless and irresponsible about it that I'm like, I'd rather them not talk about him.
Yeah, probably. Okay, well, look, we're gonna be following this as this thing proceeds, but we do need to jump over to some of the rest of the Republican primary. It's not just Trump, although he's gonna win no matter what happens. Let's jump into our next topic, starting with this video.
When I go back to Iowa, it will not be as a presidential candidate. I am suspending my campaign. I think the voters who are the most remarkable people on the planet have been really clear that they're telling me not now, Tim. I don't think they're saying, Trey, no, but I do think they're saying not now. And so I'm going to respect the voters and I'm going to hold on and keep working really hard and look forward to another opportunity.
So with that, another one bites the dust. We'd been wondering, coming out of the GOP debate, who is going to drop out? And it seemed like Tim Scott, who failed to break through and is still polling at 2 or 3%, is probably the most likely to drop out. And he did. It was a surprise nationally. It was a surprise even to Trey Gowdy, who seemed to have no idea that this guy was going to spontaneously announce that he was ending his campaign. Don't you normally do that with like a big event surrounded by your supporters?
And they all go, weird. No.
Yeah. Look. It makes sense for him to drop out. He is burning millions of dollars on a pipe dream. He, I think, showed a little bit of ability to self-reflect. He stopped before going where he should have gone when he said, they're saying not now, not no. No, they're saying no. Like, they're saying no. I mean, maybe if you were the only person, I'm sure they like stuff about you. You're super religious and there's all sorts of groups that you want to demonize and all that. But no, they're not particularly interested. So probably not a bad choice. Francesca, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Tim Scott really wasn't offering anything, right? Like he was, again, all of this is like, if you're not really, there's no real lane that he's operating in. It's just, he's not really gonna criticize Trump. He wants the MAGA support, I guess, but he also kind of wants to be taken more like a, you know, normal Republican. I don't know. And like, so I feel like Nikki Haley, if anyone has like really the lane on, let's get back to like, you know, let's get back to sort of like, you know, centrist Republicanism. Yeah. I think she's got that on lock, and she's doing a good job like not burning through her money.
But you just remind, like, I think you're totally right. I think Nikki Haley wants to be running for president in 2004, you know, absent George W. Bush or something. But it reminds, I wish I could give credit to the woman who posted it. I don't remember. But she said Nikki Haley was called Dick Cheney in heels, and the part she took issue with was the heels. That's a good point. Dick Cheney was really bad, and she seems kind of in that, at least in terms of foreign policy, in that ideological tradition. But Tim Scott, I don't know what the specific appeal was supposed to be. He almost more than, I guess, anyone else, even Mike Pence, maybe centered like conservative Christianity, you know, like not in the way that Trump pretends to care about any of this or believe in God or whatever. No, Tim Scott clearly does believe a lot of this stuff, and he talked about it nonstop. I guess that was supposed to be his appeal, but it didn't break through. If you look at this poll, I mean, there he said, I believe that's 2%. Like you're behind Chris Christie. Like that's going to be tough. And he began his campaign with $22 million.
Jesus.
And we're often told by the right that they're anti-elitist and everything, but like, burning millions of dollars on a presidential campaign that could never work seems like the most elitist thing in the universe, but they're not gonna think about that. I'll also just throw out there, like, it seems interesting that he finally had, I believe at the debate, his girlfriend, who had been the center of, apparently while I was gone, a lot of debate and speculation, everything. She finally came to an event, which ended that mystery. And then almost immediately after that, he drops out. It could just be that he thought maybe he'd break through at the debate and it didn't go that way. So it doesn't have to be anything conspiratorial, but it was a weird candidacy. I don't know that we'll remember it a year from now. Any other thoughts?
I mean, I guess my thoughts are more broadly about, you know, Tim Scott being a Black Republican senator, right? And like, what, you know, how far can a Black man, even a conservative Black man, really advance in a Republican Party that is truly loves demonizing African Americans and the community writ large? And so I think, you know, Tim Scott's kind of plays a role, right? He signs off on when they want to, you know, bash the BLM movement or talk about the defund the police movement. Not that the Democrats don't also do that. But he also, I think, offered a little bit of like, you know, maybe potential hope to like work with the other side, being a Black man in the United States. So it's, I think there's more to be said. And also with Nikki Haley, when it comes to, you know, race and gender, it seems like Nikki Haley has found her ability to talk about her gender. You know, like, I am 5-inch heels and I don't wear my, like, I run in them, blah, blah, blah. But like Tim Scott maybe wasn't able to talk about him being Black in America in a way that like, took into consideration conservatives, you know, fifis, which are mostly racist, you know, not all, but you know what I'm saying? Like the MAGA base.
Yeah. I mean, but theoretically something for him to consider over the next 4 years, because he's still on the younger side. He says not now, but maybe. And who knows, maybe that very necessary but hard to imagine, you know, rebirth of the Republican Party where common sense or sanity or centered once again could come. But I don't see it coming. And even if that happened, I'm not sure that Tim Scott would be the guy at that point. It'd probably be someone like Chris Christie, honestly. Anyway, with that said, we are burning hours. So we're going to take our next break. We come back. We are days away from another government shutdown. Or are we? We're going to talk about it after this. Welcome back, one and all. We've got a little bit more for you in this first hour. Hit the like button if you haven't already, and we'll jump into this. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has a challenge ahead of him. His first major challenge as speaker, which is, can he keep the government funded? He's got a plan. It's a relatively clean two-part extension of various government programs to buy us a few more months before we get to have this conflict yet again. But it's already looking like it's unlikely to pass before Friday, when the deadline actually happens. So he's got this 32-page piece of legislation that would extend government funding for a number of different federal programs. So veterans, military construction, agriculture, transportation, housing, energy, water development through January 19th. All the rest would be funded for a couple more weeks. But it doesn't include everything that theoretically could be expanded during this time, or continued, I should say, during this time. So funding by President Biden for Israel, Ukraine, and the US border with Mexico, they would much rather, the Republicans, be able to separate those things out and then ask for insane things and not get all of it, but get a little bit of insane stuff on those areas. So I don't know, a guarantee of allowance for a few more Ukrainian civilian casualties. I don't know what they're going to ask for, but something crazy. Anyway, even with this plan, which only extends the government funding for a couple more months and allows them room to challenge some of these major programs, it already looks like it's going to be difficult for him to pass, because he can only afford to lose 4 GOP votes. And some have already spoken out against this. So Marjorie Greene, I think mid-stroke, I'm going to say, full caps responded to this saying, no money to Ukraine, close the border, stop the weaponized government, impeach all of the names I've heard. Seems like she's going to be a no. And you only need a few more no's. And it looks like Chip Roy says it's 100% clean. It's not. Again, they're not doing that funding clean for those major programs. So he's just lying there. But regardless, he opposes it. That's 2 of your 4 right there. Look, we knew once Johnson took over that things were going to be complicated. It was complicated under the previous guy. But the continued dysfunction of the Republicans in government, very much on display, Francesca.
Look, I think Mike Johnson is a psychotic Christian nationalist, but I actually like this proposal, because I think we need to slow the roll with sending a lot of weapons and money abroad, and definitely to the US-Mexico border, where we're being fear-mongered that, you know, I don't know, Hamas is coming through the US-Mexico border. They can't even get through the border with Egypt. So I like this. I'm like, yeah, maybe we should put all the, you know, kill money on the sidelines. So I would be surprised, actually, if we didn't see some Democrats voting for this. We know they want a continuing resolution. We know they want to keep the government open. We know that they saved homeboy's butt the last time. I can't even remember, Kevin something. They saved Kevin McCarthy's butt the last time around. I think Democrats should vote for this. But of course, because they are also bloodthirsty when it comes to supplying Israel with more money to level Gazans with, they probably won't. And because they don't see, they lump Ukraine in there, even though when it comes to Israel-Palestine, they are, you know, on the wrong side. They'll probably not vote for it either. But we might see squad members, you know, we might see AOC, Cori Bush, Ayanna Pressley, and others vote for something like this. Yeah. So it could be a very interesting play here.
Yeah, I'm like trying to work through how they're combining all these different things. Obviously, they want to have a big debate over the border. Even though, again, Biden has always been much closer to Trump policies on the border than the Republicans are ever going to give him credit for. And they don't want the Ukraine funding. So I get that. But holding up the funding that would go to Israel, is the idea going to be that they're going to like make Biden do cuts in the other ones to get the Israel funding that he wants, when every single one of them would say they support that funding? And were they to block it, they could be attacked as opposing the Israeli government's war on Hamas. That seems like a dangerous strategy.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point.
I don't know. Anyway, not one that they're likely to be punished on, because I have a feeling that Biden and the Democrats probably will find some way through this, and Biden will probably be willing to negotiate with them. Whereas, like, you have this guy who's going to have a very difficult time actually controlling the House. You have an opportunity to make the Republicans spend the next 8 months looking absolutely insane and feckless and ineffective going into the presidential race. Don't lend them a hand, don't save them, but we'll end up seeing what happens. Okay, with that said, we have one more story, a little bit lighter to close out the hour, like comparatively lighter, I guess. Let's jump into that. An orthodontist in North Carolina has an interesting promotion for his patients who might be interested in getting Invisalign. So Invisalign is the tooth straightening thing brought by Align Technology. Well, he wants to give you a free gun if you sign up. And Invisalign, Align Technology, probably doesn't have much interest in that. They're not a part of it, but they've become a part of it thanks to him. This is Jason Gladwell of Gladwell Orthodontics. So he has a program called Grins and Glocks.
My God.
Because why not in America? Why shouldn't guns have something to do with taking care of your teeth? I try to remember that there's a lot of people who watch this show who don't live in America, and some of you might be new to American politics. I hope that this strikes you as odd. It should strike everyone as odd. What do these have to do with each other, Francesca? Why should you get a free gun if you do Invisalign?
You know, when a crazed mass shooter is threatening to kill me and they are about to pull the trigger, it's always nice when they do so with a beautifully aligned smile. When they grin, that psycho grin, it's nice when it's just like the last thing I see is just a bring. Oh, is that Invisalign? Bye. I'm sorry. I'm a comic and this is incredibly dark, but that's the only thing I could say about it. This is so stupid and ridiculous. I mean, how many years has it been since Michael Moore came out with Bowling for Columbine and talked about, you know, opening a bank account and you get a free gun? Like, how ridiculous that was. And we have not talked about something we've not made any progress on. A lot of other things we talk about, it's like, okay, yeah, we've moved the needle. Gun control? No.
It's gotten to the point where now if I'm on the East Coast, I'm only going to be comfortable around people with jacked ass teeth. That's going to be it, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Less Than Lucid says guns and gums is better than grins and glocks. That's 100% true. I think you wanted to get the brand name in there. By the way, I love that, like, the Invisalign has to be like, we have nothing to do with this, but presumably the Glock has no problem with it. There's been no progress. Like, if you are a rabid like pro gun person, like, you must have been so tense for a while there, for a couple years, thinking like, you know, there's been some mass shootings, but like, what if lots of kids are gunned down? Or what if a concert is shot up? Or what if a church is shot up? Or what if a mall is, that could be the thing that ends. Oh, no, we're good. Whew, okay, we've pushed past all of those lines that we never should have crossed as a society, and now anything goes. So that's fun for us. Anyway, if you're interested in pursuing this, Glock 19s retail for more than $500. So it's a significant present for the $3,000 or so that you might spend on Invisalign or whatever. And look, he wants to assure everyone, or I should say the gun club owner that he is aligning with, because you don't have to get the gun. You can get time at this gun club, that you will still have to go in person. There will be an on-site background check in order to get the gun. So this is already more responsible than so many of the gun-related stories that we've talked about. It just seems so needless and odd, and I don't know what's wrong with our culture. Any final thoughts?
No, that exactly. Just that. Also, dentists are horrible upsellers. Your teeth are fine. You don't need an Invisalign. They're always like, it can be whiter, straighter. Like, why? Why? So I can die?
A misfire? I had an Invisalign back in the day. Anyway, dude, you got a gun,
though. It didn't work, clearly. Look at this.
Clearly not. They're worse than ever. Anyway, thank you for joining us on our first hour, everyone. We do have the aftermath, though. More news to talk about and Cenk Uygur to talk with after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.